We'd like to take a moment to thank you for listening to the Block Church podcast. If these messages have inspired you, encouraged you, or make a difference in your life, we'd love for you to subscribe, comment, and share it with a friend.
Our message for today, the sermon title is called Jesus, the Hope of the World. Have you ever had a desire to do something good or do something, you know, that you felt was right, but as you like started on your way or as you started doing that thing, you had a second thought like, man, maybe this wasn't a good idea after all. So I had a moment like that last year. I was on the train, and as I was getting off the train, I noticed there was a young woman who had a stroller, and she was by herself. She had her child with her. And so I noticed she was by herself. And so as she got off this train, I picked up the stroller, you know, flexing my muscles. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna help her lift this stroller up the flight of stairs. And that was all good and well. I didn't drop the baby, thank God. But what I did not know is that this train station was going under construction. And so the elevator that would usually be working on the other end was out of order. So in replacement of the elevator, there were now three flights of stairs that I had to carry the stroller down. So I had this moment where I was like, you know, should I treat this like an Uber pool? You know, I know your stop, you know, is there, but the app is telling me I gotta let you off right here. But the Holy Spirit was like, nah, Derek, you can't do that. You gotta see it through. So I'm like, oh God, this is what I get for being a good Christian. But I bit down, I locked my knees, I lifted the stroller up and down the three flights of stairs, I went. And it was not yet the year of health, so I didn't have a fitness mindset. And so I was struggling, but I got down the steps, and the mom, the woman, she was so thankful. And I can't imagine that just that small gesture made her day a little bit easier and made her life a little bit better. See, where the people of God are, things should be better. Because where Jesus is, things are better and people get better. And where Jesus is not, things are darker. And so there is no doubt, there's no question that Jesus, by way of God's people, he is the hope of the world. I'm going to prove it to you. There is a top list of post-Christian cities here in the U.S., post-Christian, meaning they don't believe in God. They haven't attended church for 6 months or more. They don't agree with the necessity of church or faith, or they don't feel the responsibility to share their faith. And so here are some cities and here are the statistics. There's Seattle, who had the greatest increase in opioid deaths from 2010 to 2017. Property crime is 134% higher than the national average. In Rochester, New York, crime rate is 61% higher than the national average. In New Haven, Connecticut, violent crime rate is 414% more than the rest of the state and 114% higher than the national average. I actually have some family that lives in New Haven, and the nickname for the town is Pistol Wave in New Haven. The average shows. In Boston, Massachusetts, 1 out of 5 citizens lives in poverty. In Springfield, Massachusetts, there's 3 times the state average of teen pregnancy. And then right here in Philadelphia has one of the highest crime rates, has U.S. Suicide of young youth was twice as high among black students. And then drug overdoses continue to rise. And so it couldn't be more clear that wherever Jesus is not, there is an absence, there's an absence of hope, there's absolute chaos, and there is extreme darkness. And so here we are in a city that we love, the city of brotherly love, but there is still so much darkness. But the good news is that we have the answer, and the answer is the hope, and his name is Jesus. My friend Rihanna said it best. Somebody's gonna find love in a hopeless place. Come on, somebody. So let's go to our text for today, Luke chapter 19, and we're gonna start with verses 1-4. It says, Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector in the region, and he had become very rich. Says he tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree beside the road, for Jesus was going to pass that way. See, here's the first point. Everyone is looking for hope. Something I want to go back to if we think about that list that I just read to you. Not all of those cities were impoverished. Because there are a lot of poor people. There are a lot of people that are living in poverty, but that have lots of hope. And so here was Zacchaeus, who was a tax collector, which meant he was very rich, but yet he was still hopeless. The point is, everyone's looking for hope. See, the contents of your wallet do not reveal your level of hope. However, the content of your heart does. And what I love about this story is that in verse 2, it's telling us that Zacchaeus was a rich man, but in the very next verse, it goes on to say he was too short to see Jesus over the crowd. So he was rich, but yet he still had a limitation. And then that limitation forced him to push a little harder, to push a little further so that he could obtain hope and connect with Jesus. So remember the Beatitudes where Jesus tells us, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek, blessed are those who are persecuted. And then he goes on to say in Matthew chapter 5, 14 through 15, he says this, you are the light of the world, like a city on a hilltop that cannot be hidden. It says, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. So another word for hope is light. And I want to point out the significance of a city on a hill, or Jesus referencing us as a city on a hill. And it's much deeper than we think. See, in that time, when a city was destroyed or when a city was ruined, it wasn't just as easy to pick up and move somewhere else. Like right now, if there was a natural disaster, we could just move over to the next state, or we could, you know, go somewhere else. But in that day, it was not that simple because where they were living, the place that they were inhabiting, had natural resources that weren't necessarily easy to come by if they traveled elsewhere. Resources like water or vegetation. And so because it wasn't easy to move when a city was destroyed or ruined, they built the new city right on top of the ruins. And so now the city was on a hill and it was shining like a light. And so when people were traveling or wandering or looking for a place of rest or safety, they knew if they saw the city on a hill that had a light shining, it was at that place where they could find rest, food, and safety. And so when Jesus calls his people to be like a light shining on a city hill, he's referencing the poor in spirit. And so when they are traveling, when they are searching, when they are looking, we should be the light that's shining up on the hill so that we can point them to Jesus, who is the living water, Jesus, who's the bread of life, Jesus, who is our light burden of rest, and Jesus, who's our strong tower that when we run in, we are safe. See, Zacchaeus was looking for something more than just money. He had it, but yet he was still looking for more. He wasn't satisfied. He wasn't content. And so there are many of our family and friends who are in that same circumstance where they're not looking for money. They need more than that, but yet they have a limitation. They might be short-sighted and not even know what they are looking for. But there are people in our lives who need to be sitting in this seat. But they might look like they have it all together. They might appear to seem okay, or they might have a status, but they are still in need of hope. And the question for us, church, is, can they see our light? Are we shining or are we hiding? When people see us, do they see the light of Jesus? Are we reflecting the hope of the world? Are we a city on a hill? That when people see us, they know, oh, here's where I can find safety and rest and hope. And so the scripture goes on in verse 5, and it says, When Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and called him by name. "Zacchaeus," he said, "quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today." And I want to pause right here where Jesus says his name and then says, "quick, come down." Because I love the urgency in Jesus calling Zacchaeus and telling him to come. He doesn't just say, "come down," but he says, "come down quickly." And that's important because I believe Jesus recognizes the urgency in Zacchaeus coming down so that he can receive hope. And it's the same for us with people in our lives. We have to recognize that there must be an urgency. We can't delay. We can't say, "oh, I'll invite them next week or next month when this is happening or when that is happening," because we don't know how long life is going to afford them the opportunity to be here. And so it's our responsibility to always be offering hope, and the time is always now. So Zacchaeus, he said, "quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today." So here's the second point. Hope has a name and hope knows your name. Yeah. See, the Jews, they hated, and Jesus was a Jew, they hated tax collectors. I'm sure many of you in here feel the same way. But in that day, they hated tax collectors because they practiced what was called tax farming, which meant they collected extra or more than what they needed to, and they collected it for themselves. And so they were dishonest, they lacked integrity. And so it's significant that Jesus called Zacchaeus by name because he was a chief tax collector, which meant he was very rich, and it also meant he was very hated and disliked. It's also said that Zacchaeus was probably rarely called by his full name because his full name, Zacchaeus, in the Hebrew origin meant one who was pure and one who was clean. But yet, his life exhibited something that was very contrary to someone who was pure and someone who was clean. But here is Jesus boldly calling him by his name and redeeming who he was. Reminds me of John chapter 10, verse 3. It says, "and the sheep recognize the voice of the true shepherd, for he calls his own by name and leads them out, for they belong to him." And so they were calling Zacchaeus tax collector, which meant he was bad, he was evil, he was greedy, he was a sinner. But Jesus was calling him Zacchaeus, which meant he was pure and meant he was clean. See, instead of calling you by the name that you and others call yourself, Jesus calls you his own and declares who you'll become before you even get there. So you might have been called a liar, you might have been called a cheater, you might have been called the worst of these, but Jesus calls you son, he calls you daughter, he calls you righteous, he calls you his own. So hope has a name. And his name is Jesus, and Jesus knows your name. Right. And who we are and who we were does not have to be who we become. And the same goes for those who are far off. God knows their name. But are we calling them from out of the trees and into this seat so that they can become who God means for them to be? So in verse 6, it says, "Zacchaeus quickly climbed down and took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. But the people were displeased. 'He has gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner,' they grumbled." So let's just recap here. So Zacchaeus is in pursuit of hope, and he goes up in the tree, and Jesus calls him down. Then Jesus goes to his house. They have an encounter. And now Jesus, Zacchaeus is receiving Jesus, and instead of being happy, the same people that should be celebrating, who should be the first people at the party, who should be excited that someone who once was lost has now received hope, they're grumbling. See, it brings us to our third point. Don't be a hope hater. Anybody had someone who ever stole your hope before? Christians, followers, believers of Jesus, don't do this. It's a religious spirit and a self-righteous attitude, and it breaks the heart of God. And if we're doing this, we can't be a city on a hill and we can't reach the world. There was a time about 3 months ago when I was in my area, my neighborhood, and I was walking down the street, and there's this one particular block that I walk down, and there's usually always this man who appears to be homeless, and he's always asking for change. And I never have change in my pocket to give to him, you know, credit card, debit card, you know, the society we live in, no cash. And so I was walking on this particular day past him, and I was excited because I finally had change to give to him. But as I approached him or walked past, something really strange happened. He didn't say anything. And so I kept walking. And as I kept walking, God asked me, he said, "Derek, why didn't you give him the change that was in your pocket?" And my response was simple, "Well, God, he didn't ask." And God responded to me, "Do you always ask for the blessings that I give to you?" And in that moment, I was convicted and I turned right around and gave him what was in my pocket because I realized I was requiring a standard of him that God didn't even expect from me. And so in that moment, I was being a hope hater because I was in a position to offer this man hope. But because he did not fit my standards or my requirements, I was ready to walk away. And so how many times do we see someone experiencing the same grace and the same mercy that we've received, yet we find a human problem with God's supernatural power? We can never allow ourselves to get in a place where we feel we have the requirements or we know the list that someone needs to measure up to in order to receive God's love and his hope. See, many of us, we have our own qualifications. We have a top 10 list. We treat who deserves salvation like a dating app. Swipe left, you don't deserve it. But Jesus has one thing on his list. It's simply, if you're lost, come. And so many of us, we need to trade our long list of what we think people are need to match up to and trade our list for Jesus's list. If you're lost, come. So are we a city on a hill if we say, you can sit here, but you can't? This one can sit here, but that one can't. Reminds me of 1 John chapter 2, verse 9. It says, anyone who says I am in the light while holding hatred in his heart toward a fellow believer is still in the darkness. Church, there might be some people that we're called to invite that walk through these doors that don't look like us, that don't act like us, that don't smell like us, that don't come from where we come from, and that maybe even have wronged us. But I want to tell you something. They still deserve to sit in this seat because hope belongs to everyone. It's not just for the rich. It's not just for the poor. It's not just for those who look like they have it all together. But when Jesus came to die, he came to save everyone. And the requirement is simple. Are you lost? Are you in need of hope? So verse 8 says, meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord. And if I have cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much. Next verse says, for the Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost. And so if you're following the story, you see this beautiful journey that Jesus is taking Zacchaeus on, where he's searching and he's looking and he's in need of hope. And then Jesus calls him by his name and asks him to come down out of the tree. Then Jesus goes to his home and Zacchaeus and Jesus have a personal encounter. And because of that encounter, now Zacchaeus realizes that he wants to turn from his old ways and now live his life in a way that's pleasing to the Lord. And he recognizes it's not just enough that I've received this, but now I need to give this away. So here's the final point. Hope gives hope. So Zacchaeus received unprecedented hope, and he could not keep it to himself. And it begs me to ask us this question. Are we giving hope away? And if not, have we forgotten the hope that we have and already and continue to receive from God? See, when you're given a gift, it elicits a response. Whether that response is a thank you, whether that response is using the gift, or whether that response is giving a gift in return. And so Jesus has given us the greatest gift of hope. All of us here, we were lost. We were in darkness. We were in sin. Some of us struggled with depression or anxiety, or struggled through a divorce, or were cheated on, or were casted away, or experienced loss. But here we are today because Jesus extended hope to us, and we now have received the message of his love. Come on, you ought to give God a praise for that, because he gave us hope. And church, it is our duty to give that hope away. You know, if you've ever been around a child or a toddler, you know they all go through that phase where their parent gives them a gift or a toy or something special. And when someone goes to play with them or maybe take that toy, they respond emphatically, "Mine, this is mine." And then the parent tries to correct that child and say, "Yes, I gave you this gift, but this is a gift to be shared." And many of us are like the child or the toddler, where God has given us the gift of hope and salvation, but we hold so close to it and we say, "It's mine, it's mine." And you might not say it with your words, but you say it with your actions, because you're afraid to invite that coworker who you know needs to hear the message of Jesus to sit with you in church. Or you know there's a family member that's struggling and needs to hear a word of encouragement, but you're too afraid or you don't want to be bothered, so you keep your mouth closed. Or because you're afraid to take that invite card and give it to someone that you meet in passing. And I believe God would say to us today, "Yes, my child, I've given you this gift, but it's a gift to be shared. It's not just for you to hoard for yourself. It's not just so you can experience all my blessings, but I have given you this gift so that you can share with someone else who has not yet received it." And so we must be believers who take a moment to reflect and see who is around me that needs to be sitting in this seat so they can receive hope and safety and love. See, church, when we obtain hope, we can't be so quick to forget where we've come from. And many of us as believers, you know, if you've been in church for any length of time, a month or anything longer, sometimes we walk this journey and we start doing a little better, and we forget that we were once in a place that we didn't have hope. But Christians, followers of Jesus, we can never get so far away or ahead of ourselves that we forget the mess that God saved us from. Why? Because there's someone in that same mess that needs to know there's a God who can redeem you from this. You don't have to stay here. There is hope on the other side. And I'm going to share my story with you so that you can come to know the same hope that I've experienced. See, remember your hopelessness, and then you have to acknowledge your freedom, but then you have to pass it along to those who need it. So as you remember, as you acknowledge, don't forget the last step. You gotta pass it on. So how can we be a city on a hill today? What can we do to be a city on a hill today? I want to give you a few tangible steps that you can write down, you can take a picture of. Because again, these next few weeks, we're thinking within our mind, who should be sitting here? So the first thing that you can do, you can start by inviting a friend. And take those invite cards and be thinking, who should I be giving this to? As I'm at work, as I'm on the train, as I'm in conversation, who should be sitting in this seat? And the second thing you can do is you can tell someone who doesn't know or doesn't have a relationship with God what he has done for you. See, I want to tell you something, church. We cannot be afraid to share our story because someone else needs to hear what God has done in our lives. And so we must be okay with God allowing us to share what he's done in our lives. And then the third thing that you can do is you can be praying for someone who needs it. Maybe there's someone that's far off or disconnected or disenfranchised with the church or disenchanted that needs to be sitting in this seat. You can pray that God would break their walls down and that they would receive your invite and that they would come and sit with you. And so church, even just for a moment, let's ask the Holy Spirit, Lord, who in our lives should we be thinking about and inviting and bringing to sit with us? Help us to have eyes that are open and ears that are open to hear what you're saying to us and hearts open and ready to receive whoever you bring into our minds. Because we want to be a city on a hill with a light shining so that when people see us, they know there is safety, there is refuge, and there is hope. Yeah. Come on, church, would you stand to your feet? Every location, stand to your feet. Would you bow?
Thanks again for listening. To hear more messages like this one, be sure to check out our podcast channel and subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you like what you're hearing, we'd love for you to rate, review, and share with your friends. We love you, and thanks again for listening.